I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive. You drive
me crazy. It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, with just under 20 minutes to go before the closing bell here, taking a look at the S&P 500 up about 0.8%, with discretionary leading the way up almost 3% there, especially when you think of names like Tesla in there that did get an upgrade for Morgan Stanley earlier today. But if you look kind of under the hood here, as you know, Tim, obviously central bankers in a blackout week this week ahead of the Fed's decision on September 20th, but we do have that CPI data that we continue to talk about due on Wednesday. And traders are also obviously waiting for Apple's iPhone 15 event that is coming tomorrow. So a lot of different things going on this week, but who better to join us now and talk to us about this than Doug Cioka, CEO at Caver Capital from Leawood, Kansas, joining us right now to break through what he's watching in the markets. Now, Doug, thanks so much for being back with us. Talk to us about your view on today's rebound after the S&P 500 did snap two consecutive weeks of gains last week.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I mean, it's always encouraging to start Monday off on a good foot. I think, like Bill had mentioned, and you corroborated, as it relates to consumer discretionary between Tesla and Amazon, and obviously the Tesla move on the heels of a really strong upgrade for Morgan Stanley, kind of moving away just from the auto emphasis of the organization and kind of stretching out to what a lot of people knew, you know, it might have kind of widespread impacts across EVs, communication, and now, of course, supercomputing. So a little bit of a tailwind, maybe in the hopes that the last 3 weeks had taken a little bit of the wind out of the market sales and kind of preparing, like you said, for Wednesday and Thursday with CPI and PPI. But a nice start to the year, though the bonds are pretty flat across the curve.
Hey, Doug, good to have you back with us, by the way. It's been a long time since we spoke.
Yes.
So, do you buy this? I mean, I know, you know, that maybe you're not prepared to talk Tesla, but you brought it up, so I wanted to get into this because, I mean, you know, it's up 9.9% right now. And Adam Jonas over at Morgan Stanley is saying that software and services revenue are going to become the company's biggest value driver. We're not talking about Apple here. We're talking about Tesla, an automaker.
Right.
Do you buy it?
You know, specifically about Tesla, like you said, Tim, we kind of have a prohibition on diving into individual equities. I think what the market is looking for is substantiation on some of the thinness that's led the rally to this point. And you know, you look at it, kind of consensus on EPS, about 250 next year, which is 18 times. And if you then strip out the biggest 10 companies in the market, well, they're only really trading at 16 to 17 times. So I think momentum being such a strong factor, and it has been kind of riveting as it relates to kind of the broad application of some of these very large sort of FANG and in the Magnificent Seven stocks, there is kind of an enduring interest in substantiating what's sort of taken the market to this point. And it becomes kind of the path of least resistance versus trying to delve outside of that Magnificent Seven to find other areas that could be catalysts for the sort of the last quarter of the year.
When we're thinking about three key areas, especially to Tim's point earlier, talking about seasonality in September, if we're looking at, say, the dollar yields as well as oil, the direction of those three, how crucial is that when you're thinking about the direction of where stocks could go as we try to close out the third quarter pretty soon?
Yeah, I think so much, as much as all three of those would be important, I think the dollar value is the most, right? I think you saw a really strong move in the dollar the last 3 weeks. That had a very negative impact on performance underlying U.S. equities. I think some of the enthusiasm around like this enduring continued growth in GDP. I mean, shoot, the Atlanta Fed right now is at 5.6% for Q3. That's pretty incredible at this point of the cycle. So if that is going to materialize, how does the Fed substantiate a pause? And if they don't pause and we have to see a little bit more tightening, that then brings in the fear that they over-tighten, which can not just slow the economy, but cause us to go into recession. So the dollar is what we're watching most closely. It's a little bit of a key to the kingdom as it relates to the underlying value and direction of our dollars in both equity and fixed income.
Doug, talk to us about international. It's an area when it comes to equities that you're bullish on. Why?
Yeah, we are. So the valuation discrepancy, Tim, right now is pretty pronounced, multi-year wise as it relates to EPS. The other thing that we've seen, right, and it's been kind of a two-speed recovery, right, there's not as much liquidity that has to come out of developed markets. We like EM as well, though China's just too big a wild card right now for us to get too super excited about. But we think, given number one, valuation, the disparity, number two, the fact that we're seeing sort of less depths of extraction of excess liquidity overseas. The third thing is, and this is a little bit nuanced, when you look at individual equities overseas, they're not spending a lot of their cash flow buying back shares because a big part of their incentive compensation does not deal with restricted stock units, ISOs and NQSOs relates to stock option comp. So more is being paid back out to dividends, which provide a nice total return contribution, but also being reinvested into the businesses as opposed to being used to repatriate shares.
I know you're watching 4,500 on the S&P 500 as a resistance level. What are you watching as a level four support?
Yeah, that great question. You know, we tend to think less in those terms and more on EPS. We just feel like at 18 times, such thin breadth in the market, 4,500 seemed like a very dependable level. We're now at sort of a proving point coming through Q3, where we expect to see an elevation of the profits, profitability across the S&P 500 companies. If that's true, then Jess, I could definitely see the market taking 4,750 to 4,800 going through the end of the year and into next year. You got to understand, if you're an asset allocator, and we are at Kavar Capital, this is an environment that you create, right? Because you have low conviction in equities broadly. You've got elevating volatility finally. You have equal or close to equal opportunity between both stocks and bonds, and certainly within stocks and certain industry sectors. And we're in a rising profit cycle environment. With a monetary policy, that last thing really important, monetary policy backdrop, whose likely next pronounced move is going to be accommodative.
What do you
so
mean?
We're not in the short end of ideas, is a little way of saying.
Yeah, talk about that, Doug. The idea that it's going to be accommodative. What do you think it's going to be, and how is it going to be accommodative?
Yeah, so if you figure just historically on average, the sort of the status quo period between when the Fed stops hiking and begins cutting is about 10 months historically. Now that's skewed, right? Because we went through what, almost 10 years, right, coming out of the global financial crisis till 2016, when the I'm sorry, 2007, end of 16, end of 17, when the Fed started to hike. So we really feel like this is it's going to be the amount of the liquidity they took out of the economy going from 0 to 5.5% begets the patience that's required on that known lag between impact and implementation. So we really feel like they're in a wait and see period, which I think is probably exactly where they need to be. Not to be understated, this is not a partisan comment, but election years have very strong influences on rates. And the most near-term example goes back to 2016, where there were four hikes that the market was pricing in, and we got none. So I do think we will have kind of wait and see, and ultimately what ends up happening, and this is a very strong historical precedent, is once the Fed funds crosses above CPI, it tends to be a really good opportunity for fixed income assets. And that's reasons, there's one or two reasons behind that. Number
right.
one, that's gone too far, ultimately they have to cut. Number two, they realize, right, mm-hmm. if they went so far that they actually go into recession, that's really positive for a lot of asset classes, notably bonds.
Doug Scioca, we love it when you join us. Thanks so much for taking the time. Doug is Chief Executive Officer and partner at Kavar Capital Partners, joining us from Leawood, Kansas this afternoon. This is Bloomberg Business Week.